Halpern, Consultant Resources, and another, Jeffrey M. Summers, Jonathan E. Halpern, Accounts Counsel, Christopher R. Possible, W. F. Dury, Galilee, Joseph R. Poe, Galilee Council.
May it please the court, I'm Jeff Summers, representing Michelle Clark in this appeal from a personal injury action in the Spotsylvania Circuit Court. With me at council table is Jonathan E. Halpern, Ms. Clark's trial counsel. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a rebuttal.
All right.
The issue here is the application of federal bankruptcy law to determine Ms. Clark's standing in the state court. Normally, I would have phrased that this is a state law standing issue. But here, the application of federal bankruptcy law, I believe, confused the trial court. In particular, your case of Kocher v. Campbell, 282 Virginia 113, held that a Chapter 7 bankruptcy barred a litigant. But Kocher is factually distinguished from Clark. Ms. Clark did what is the equivalent of throwing a dime over your shoulder and having it land in the only crack in the barn floor into which it will fit. In her particular instance, she filed a Chapter 13 individual reorganization that was approved, the plan had an order entered, and it began to be executed. 10 days later, she had a slip and fall incident. Months later, she petitioned the bankruptcy court to convert her Chapter 13 into a Chapter 7. Where the trial court, I believe, fell awry was when does the personal injury claim become part of the bankruptcy estate? There had been a change in the federal law back in 99. And that change was designed to put a person who converts from 13 to 7 in the same position as a person who went directly to 7. In other words, it was designed to put Kocher and Clark in the same position. That changes when you start fencing off the property. Under the revised federal law, because Ms. Clark was not injured until after her Chapter 13 was filed, the personal injury claim is not part of the Chapter 7 estate. It's excluded. For that reason, she had individual standing.
Has the motion of the bankruptcy trustee, is that still pending?
It is, Your Honor. I pulled the PACER records last night. The latest motion to extend time has been granted. There was an order entered on August 8th. There had been no resolution of this. I infer they're simply waiting for this court.
Okay, so the claim of the trustee that the conversion was in bad faith has not been resolved by the bankruptcy court?
It has not, Your Honor.
All right.
And I was about to go to the bad faith issue. There was no evidence taken in the state court. There were discussions, there was argument, but even though Mr. Halperin asked for an RA tenants hearing on the issue of bad faith, none happened. It didn't happen in an adversarial proceeding yet in the bankruptcy court. There's an additional issue. Because bankruptcy law is exclusively a federal province, can a state court make a factual finding of bad faith that would bind a bankruptcy court? Ms. Clark doesn't believe that's the case. You have to have a federal finding of bad faith that would bind the state court, not the other way around. In the case of bad faith in a bankruptcy proceeding, a bankruptcy court will look for fraud, deception, dishonesty, lack of disclosure, or abuse of the bankruptcy code. but it applies that with respect to creditors of the debtor.
Is that the reason you're right about that? Because the bad faith question is not ours to decide. I mean, either it was part of the estate or it wasn't part of the estate. If we decide that it was in bad faith, the bankruptcy court could basically overrule it.
You're right, Your Honor.
And if we decide that it was not in bad faith, you're exactly where you were when you started anyway. So it's not ours to decide.
Very well, Your Honor, I'll move on.
Well, I mean, don't you think that's the case?
I believe that's the case, Your Honor. I don't think bad faith is at issue here, although it has come out in the appellee's briefs. They have argued that there is sufficient evidence in the record to support a finding of bad faith by the state court. I don't think there is, because there was no evidence taken. There was no Ori Tennis hearing. There are arguments, there are pleadings, but there was no evidence.
So it seems we all agree with Justice Lemons that bad faith is not an issue for this court or the trial court. It's just an issue of standing, and the standing hinges on whether the personal injury claim was or was not part of the Chapter 7 bankruptcy case when it was converted.
Precisely so, Your Honor.
And as I understand, and maybe I don't understand bankruptcy law, but if I understand it right, and I'm getting a lot of this actually from the trustee's motion. He does a nice job of working through, or she, the federal bankruptcy law, that in a Chapter 13, after acquired property can be part of the Chapter 13 estate, but once it's converted to Chapter 7, the cutoff is the actual filing date of the Chapter 13.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so this gap property that might be part of a Chapter 13 is not part of a Chapter 7 unless the conversion was in bad faith, and that's for the bankruptcy court to decide, not us.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
And is that why it didn't have to be listed pursuant to paragraph 5 of this order?
You're referring to the trial court's order?
No, the bankruptcy order. You know, the order upon conversion of 13 to 7, paragraph 5 requires the property schedule list, and the comp claim was listed, right? But the inchoate personal injury claim was not listed.
That's correct. Although it has been listed now, the claim schedule has been amended in the federal bankruptcy court in the 7 issue, in the 7 proceeding. So it's there now.
Okay.
My friends in the appellee's table have made an issue of estoppel, and I'd like to speak to that for just a moment. I don't believe it's been preserved for you. The trial court's decision was based purely on standing. There was no cross-assignment of error about estoppel, and I think it's beyond our reach at this point. I've used about half my time, but I've said what I came here to say. I'm prepared to answer your questions. If not, I'd like to reserve my balance for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Joseph Pope, here on behalf of the appellees. Debtors seeking shelter under federal bankruptcy law bear an affirmative and unqualified duty to disclose all actual or potential legal claims. Courts nationwide, every court of appeals, federal court of appeals that has considered the issue, have concluded that debtors who fail to disclose causes of action to the bankruptcy court are barred from pursuing those claims either on lack of standing or judicial estoppel grounds. Here, relying on the reasoning of this court's decision in Coker v. Campbell, the circuit court properly ruled that Ms. Clark lacks standing to assert her personal injury action.
Is that because it's part of the Chapter 7 estate?
Your Honor, the absolute unequivocal fact is that at the time that Ms. Clark filed her personal injury action on July 7, 2011, she stood as a Chapter 7 debtor. lacking standing to assert a claim.
But why did she lack standing? What is the basis for that assertion?
Because when she knew, and this, I think this is a critical part, the duty to disclose arose when she says she has actual knowledge or when she has enough facts to know. And that is from the case of Barger v. City of Cartersville, which is the 11th Circuit decision. So by her own admission, in her pleadings, she, if you look at JA Joint Appendix 196 through 98, she says that she says she did not know she had a personal injury action until after she became a Chapter 7 debtor. And at the time she filed her personal injury action, she was a Chapter 7 debtor. And that's
but if it's not part of the estate...
It became part of the estate when she filed the action. When she filed the action,
No, wait a minute. You heard me recite the bankruptcy, basic bankruptcy law. Was my recitation of that correct or incorrect?
When the property... Correct. The operation, you were talking about the operation of Section 348A. Correct. That is right. That when the property of the Chapter post... acquired property from a Chapter 13 debtor, well, upon conversion, it would revert to the debtor so long as that there is no finding, that there is no bad faith, and so long as it's disclosed.
Correct. Well, so, and that issue is not in front of us, and it's in front of the bankruptcy court. The bankruptcy court hasn't determined that yet.
But the issue of the fact that she failed to disclose is before this court. And it's absolutely a fact that she failed in her duty to disclose.
Well, what's the impact of that failure to disclose? Isn't that a bankruptcy court question? Won't the bankruptcy court decide whether that failure to disclose now makes that a part of the Chapter 7 estate?
Well, it can be decided by the bankruptcy court, but that also leads to the idea that of the estoppel question, which was before the court, which was before the trial court, and which was properly briefed, and there was evidence that was provided by the appellees that supported a finding of estoppel. Now, those facts...
But you didn't get a ruling from the judge on that.
Correct, we did not. But the record below supports that finding. And we have, and this court has never, which is...
How is the issue brought before us of judicial estoppel? How did you bring it before us? You didn't file a cross error, right?
Well, there's no requirement to file a cross error on an issue that was never decided and for which there's no adverse finding against us. So I think that...
So anything that happened in the trial that you didn't like, it just comes before us? That can't make any sense, can it?
Well, under the right result for the wrong reason doctrine this court has recognized, which flows directly...
That's a whole lot different thing. Is that what you're asking us to do, the right result for the wrong reason?
You're right to believe that that is, I think that's a proper thing to do. So
I mean, that's different, though, than saying it's before us, isn't it?
No, I don't believe so. I believe that this court, any issue that has been argued below can be considered by this court so long as the record and a decision affirming any
well, what are the purpose? What's the purpose of assignment of errors if we can just look down at the trial and take any issue that was argued?
Well, you know, Justice Brandeis at the Supreme Court in 1924 in the case McCoy v. American Union Boiler considered the precise issue. And in that case, he said that cross appeals are only required when there's a modification of the judgment. There's no modification of the judgment. Judge Posner it's a Wellpoint decision out of the Seventh Circuit, he said the exact same thing. He said there's no reason for a cross appeal to be filed when the party is not seeking any kind of modification to the judgment. The bottom line of the trial court was that her case was dismissed. That was the precise quantum of relief to which we asked.
But if you find that she's judicially stopped from proceeding, is that the same thing as saying she doesn't have standing?
No, Your Honor, it's not exactly the same issue. That issue would be simply question of state law. It would be entirely different, and you would look to the factors as explained by this court in Bentley, and other decisions.
Well, one of those requirements is that if it's different proceedings, that it has to be the same parties.
Right.
And how is Health Tech Resources a party in the bankruptcy court?
Well, for one reason, Your Honor, they admitted...
Well, but they also took that back in a subsequent pleading, right. That admission. They took that back in a subsequent pleading. They said that was wrong to have admitted.
But one thing that's clear about bankruptcy is that in a bankruptcy case, there's really only one party. There, the one party is the debtor. Now, there are adversary proceedings that can be filed in those proceedings.
That's my question. So how is Health Tech Resources a party in the bankruptcy court?
Any party that has interest, and see, I think that's the idea about judicial estoppel that all the federal courts have looked to, is in the Supreme Court has stated, and as this court has also recognized, is the issue, it's a judicial estoppel is not subject to some irreducible formula. It is a malleable issue that has to be, that has to conform to specific positions or specific fact patterns. Bankruptcy is fundamentally different. Bankruptcy, we were an undisclosed, the technical term is that we were an undisclosed debtor in the bankruptcy case because the cause of action was never disclosed to the court. Now, if you take...
You were an undisclosed debtor?
An undisclosed debtor of the plaintiff because there was a personal injury action that would be pending against us. And so, therefore, we would be subject, possibly, to a payment of the debtor in the case. Now, the flip side of that is,
But when she came along and amended her Chapter 7 petition to list it, is that when you say you became a party, even though you hadn't challenged anything in the bankruptcy court? And
no, ma'am.
Normally, creditors aren't considered parties unless they file proof of claims or file adversary proceedings.
No, we would still be in it. One thing that I think is at the core of that is that if that is the rule that in bankruptcy that parties have to be served or have to file a proof of claim, that means under Virginia law, a debtor would have really no responsibility or no reason to even file their, to even disclose those assets because they would not be subject to judicial estoppel. Because the fact that they fail to disclose the party means that they're not a party to the case. So by her fraud, by her failure to disclose, she prevented us from ever being mentioned in the context of the bankruptcy case. So that would provide a very perverse incentive for a debtor to do that, or for a plaintiff to do that. Now,
another element has to be an adjudication, doesn't there?
Ma'am?
Isn't another element of judicial estoppel if there's been adjudication in the other proceeding?
An adjudication in the other proceeding.
Right.
Your Honor, again, an adjudication in bankruptcy, well, there actually has been an adjudication since there's been a discharge. The debtor has received a discharge. And
the debtor's received a discharge, but there's still an ongoing thing there with regard to the trustee's motion as to whether her conversion was in bad faith or not.
But, Your Honor, for purposes of judicial estoppel, the 11th Circuit, 5th Circuit, in Ray Barger and in Cartersville, said that the fact that a debtor comes along and files after she's been caught, amends her schedules, that in itself is indicative of for application of judicial estoppel. Now, that is what those courts have said. So the fact is once she failed to disclose and once she's caught, a debtor can't just go back and say, oh, well, I'm caught now, so in order to remedy that, I'm going to disclose it. That in itself would create an incredibly perverse incentive.
Well, counsel, one of the problems I'm having with this is that it seems to me that this claim against your client is either an asset of the debtor, because it's not part of the bankruptcy estate, or the trustee takes control of it. And in either event, one or the other is going to be able to sue your client. So how have you been harmed by there being a delay in the decision of who gets to sue your client?
Well, Your Honor, by this court's decision in Coker, when she filed that decision, when she filed her personal injury action, it was a nullity, and therefore the statute of limitations has run.
But that's different facts than here, though, because at this point in time, this claim is not an asset of the Chapter 7 estate.
Well, right. If the court determines that it's not an asset of the estate, then you're correct. Then the initial filing is not a nullity. That's correct. But the fact is that there is only one case that I know of, and that is one that was cited by the plaintiff, N. Ray Farmer, where a plaintiff in a personal injury action failed to disclose a personal injury case, and they were not judicially estopped from pursuing the claim. I know of no other case than that. In that case, there was no facts, there was no fact finding, or there was no record made by the defendant in the case to show that it was reckless or purposeful. Now, this court would be the first. Now, that this would be an incredible decision, an incredible precedent for this court to consider, for this court to allow this plaintiff to go forward, having failed to disclose. And I think Justice McClanahan hit something right on the head. She talked about those schedules that she was required to amend, and that order that was entered by the bankruptcy court on March the 30th, 2011. It ordered her unequivocally to disclose all potential assets, all property. She didn't do that. And for the bankruptcy system to work, debtors have to file. They have to disclose everything. She didn't do that. And she forfeits the right to go forward on that personal injury action.
It's interesting. The purpose for that is for the creditors. It's not for you. It's so that the trustee knows what assets are so they can marshal them for the creditors.
It's for the purpose of the bankruptcy system as a whole. That system...
I've never had a debtor come in and complain I wasn't listed. So I just have never seen that. And you don't have to give notice to the debtors anyhow, do you? You just give notice to creditors when you file a bankruptcy.
The order does not say... The order.
I understand that, but I'm just asking why this makes sense, what you want to do.
Well, it makes sense. It makes sense because it preserves the integrity of the courts.
Okay.
Absolutely. And that means something. That is important.
But isn't that what the bankruptcy courts are going to decide based on the trustee's motion of bad faith?
They will decide whether it becomes part of the estate.
Whether she converted in bad faith. The bankruptcy court is going to decide that.
But that does not inform the issue of judicial estoppel. Now the issue here is this court can make that decision that it is property of the estate and remand it back, and the trial court can retry this whole issue of judicial estoppel. But that itself would simply be a waste of judicial resources, because in JA 197 through 98 they say their only defense is advice of counsel. That's their only defense. And as a matter of law, the Fourth Circuit, the Fifth Circuit, the Eleventh Circuit, the Second Circuit have all said that the advice of counsel defense is not a viable defense when a party, a debtor, has failed to disclose an asset.
Counsel, I have a quick question about the application of Coker. That involved a single Chapter 7 bankruptcy filing, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So does that make any difference since this is a conversion case? Does the Coker principles still apply?
Well, if the court finds that it did not become property of the estate, then I'll agree that Coker would be inapposite, because Coker did say that it was property of the estate. That's true. But the simple truth, though, is that whether this court determines this issue on standing or if it determines this case on judicial estoppel grounds, the fact is that this plaintiff cannot go forward with this case. I see my time is up.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me begin by saying I'm gratified to hear the appellees confirm that they are, in fact, debtors to Ms. Clark. It was a gratifying statement, whether they may or not. Turning to the issue, though, I would invite the court's attention back to Farmer against Taco Bell, the Tennessee case, 242 Bankruptcy Reporter at 441. In that court's words, because the property did not become part of the bankruptcy estate, there is no reason to stop plaintiffs from pursuing the claim now because of their failure to schedule the claim. If it wasn't property of the estate at 13 filing, it accrues. She makes a mistake at 7, puts in the workers' comp claim, doesn't put in the personal injury claim, now has amended her schedules. You're right. We had a problem. It's fixed. The bankruptcy estate now has an additional asset. But the issue before you today was state court standing. And to complete the loop, because it wasn't personal property at the time of the state court case, she had standing.
So your position is that that estoppel does not defeat standing. You either have standing or you don't have standing. But estoppel may very well keep someone with standing from pursuing their case. We start as that as a legal principle.
Correct.
So if this case, if we decide the issue that's before us, which is standing, and we decide it in your favor, what's to keep the trial court on remand from deciding that it is estoppel?
I think, first of all, the issue...
And I think that's why you need to address the question of estoppel, because they've asked us to do it on the Perry reason, of right for the wrong reason, which may or may not be able to be done. So you need to address it.
I will, Your Honor. I think the very first part, though, has to be the bankruptcy court's determinations about bad faith and whether or not she intentionally...
But we're not going to decide that, I don't think. I mean, I'm only one vote out of 7, but that is a bankruptcy determination, in my judgment. I happen to think she has standing. I'm concerned about estoppel. Why don't you address it?
I was trying to take you to state court estoppel through the federal bankruptcy court first. That was my intent. If the bankruptcy court says she was allowed to amend her schedules, essentially adopting the rationale of trauma in the Taco Bell case in Tennessee, then I think the state court has to honor that determination that there was no bad faith, that she's not estopped.
Well, maybe not estopped under federal bankruptcy law, but we're talking about state personal injury law. And so estoppel, it seems to me, is not a bankruptcy question when we have a state court plaintiff seeking a judgment for personal injury. So it's an interesting argument, but they get to decide bad faith, we get to decide estoppel.
Your formulation creates a predicament where she could be in good faith and not estopped in a federal bankruptcy court, have standing and be estopped in a state court claim, all in the same set of facts.
That may very well be true.
I respectfully disagree. I think the state court would have to honor the federal court's determination that she did nothing wrong, that she did not, in fact, adopt different positions and prejudice the court. I would also note that there's a slight difference in judicial estoppel between Virginia law and federal law because of the success element to get true estoppel. I think if the federal courts say she did nothing wrong, there's no bad faith, there's no estoppel at the federal level, there has been no successful resolution in favor of the appellees. The state court then has to look at that and say she had standing. It was not the property of the 7 trustee, although the 7 can administer it now. And she's not estopped because she didn't take contradictory positions.
Well, counsel, then, looking at your prayer for relief, you say this court should reverse the trial court and remand the matter so the clerk may proceed to trial and have her day in court. But what's really going to happen, I mean, even based on your theory of the case, if we reverse the trial court on the standing issue, then immediately appellee is going to go to the bankruptcy court for a determination on bad faith.
That is probably correct, Your Honor, but I think that's what we're going to have to do.
Right. And that then controls the estoppel issue in state court, under your theory.
I believe it does, Your Honor.
Well, can the appellee really go, or is it the trustee's decision whether to seek the bad faith?
Although I'm admitted in bankruptcy, I haven't practiced there since 2006, so I'm honestly not sure.
The trustees already put that in front of the bank. The trustees already put that in front of the bankruptcy court by the motion to determine bad faith.
I think that's where we have to go next.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Court is adjourned.
All rise.